straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 175, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden, and I'm joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Duck, we've got a friend of the podcast with us, a former coworker who somehow got out of Austin without covering one football game, one Jake Trotter. What's up, Jake?
You use that line every time I come on this podcast. This might be the last time I come on.
People need to know.
We need new material, Sid.
People need to know that.
I was an Austin resident for, 8 months?
No, it was more like six. It felt like eight.
No, Jake, if you were here for 8 months, you would have covered a football game.
At least one.
That's probably true.
Yeah, I think it was six.
Sid, you need to, as you introduced Jake, you need to get into his background, his roots a little bit.
Since people are doing a lot of binging, and the big thing on Netflix is The Tiger King, and Jake, I know that members of your family are from that area of Oklahoma. You're currently the Cleveland Browns beat writer, but we know where you're from. How proud were you to see just the great representation of the great state of Oklahoma with Joe Exotic and those people with no teeth, even the girls?
Well, it is true that on my dad's side of the family, a lot of them come from Southeast Oklahoma, which is kind of where Wynnewood is, although it's not Wynnewood exactly. Although there is a great Wynnewood Red River connection. You guys know who played at a Wynnewood high school?
Who?
James Allen. Remember 1996? The overtime game.
He's the guy Stoney Clark tackled.
Yep, running back.
He's awesome. And then he came back and won the overtime game in 96, which was, I think OU was 0-4 going into that game.
We didn't call you to talk about those two games.
I'm trying to help Wynnewood out a little bit. They're taking some hits this week.
Man, they're...
Well, I like that. Yeah. How long did you work at Joe Exotic?
I never went to Joe Exotic Park. I lived in Oklahoma City after Austin for 10 years, and going back and forth from Oklahoma City to Texas, driving, whether it was Dallas or Austin, wherever, you pass by his billboard. So I've seen his billboard probably 100 times, but I never took the exit. And I think that decision has aged very well over the years.
Hey, I want one of those cuddly tigers, don't you, Ted?
Yeah, I really do. They're precious, and I'm not going to ruin it for people that haven't seen it, Doug. But there's going to be one in like the fourth episode where Tiger Mama gives birth, and Joe's just so brutal. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but watch it.
My other relatives live is on my Greek side of the family is in Tampa. So I'm covered up in this Joe Exotic documentary. I got basically where my two relatives are, where the two factions in the Joe Exotic Tiger King War.
That just kind of the whole series just kind of defines America.
I recognize a lot of those places in that documentary.
Well, I know a lot of our listeners have seen the Tiger King, but when they hear Jake Trotter, they don't want to hear about the Tiger King. They want to hear about what's going on with the Cleveland Browns, particularly Austin's favorite son, Baker Mayfield. They all but gave the Browns the AFC North title in the preseason last year, but they go 6-10. Freddie Kitchens gets the gate. John Dorsey gets the gate. How much of that was on Baker, and did he spend too much time being famous in the offseason and not enough time on football?
You know, I think that there's no doubt that you have to assign some of the blame for what happened last season to Baker and the way that he played. He did not play very well. He was not accurate with the football at the same level he was as a rookie, and especially throughout his college career at Oklahoma and even Texas Tech. His decision-making, which I think was an underrated part of his college game. I mean, he didn't throw very many interceptions at all throughout his Oklahoma career. You know, fell apart, had 21 picks, which is not good. I think Jameis Winston was the only NFL quarterback that had more. But there were a lot of factors around Baker Mayfield that contributed to the way that he played. I mean, I think you start with the offensive line. They were not good at tackle. Their starting left tackle guys, I don't know if y'all saw this or not, Craig Robinson was arrested in Texas, in El Paso, with 150-plus pounds of marijuana.
Yes.
I mean, this is like a month after the season ended.
Everybody so needs that gives a you, job to make ends meet. Come on.
That kind of gives you an idea like what they were dealing with last year, you know, on right. and off the field there. So the offensive line, particularly tackle, was a disaster. You know, I think that they were unable to find an identity offensively with Freddie Kitchens doubling as the head coach and the play caller, and there was just a lot of chaos there. And then you look at their big addition in the offseason, Odell Beckham. He didn't practice like the entire year. He practiced, he skipped OTAs after the trade. He went to one day of mini camp. He practiced, I think, 1 week of training camp and then got hurt. And basically from then on out, he was relegated to practicing on like Fridays of game week. So you're trying to establish a rapport with a guy like Odell Beckham and he's not practicing. I think that that makes it very difficult. So listen, there's no question that Baker deserves blame. You know, everybody loved his bluster, his bravado, you know, when he's winning, when he won at Oklahoma and then his rookie year. But it doesn't play very well when you're losing. And I think that was something Baker learned that, you know, when I'm not playing well, when this isn't going well, like, you know, that kind of stuff backfires on you really quickly. You know, obviously they made wholesale changes, front office, coaching staff. We'll see, you know, what they do personnel-wise, although they've already signed three guys that I think they're going to help Baker and Jack Conklin at right tackle, Austin Hooper at tight end, and a guy from your neck of the woods in Case Keenum, who they envision being a better mentor for Baker than what he had last year. So that they, you know, they're not giving up on him. They still believe in him as their, you know, franchise quarterback despite the front office upheaval. But he deserves some of the blame. But I just watching it up close and things that I saw, you know, it's hard to fault him completely because he was dealing with a lot of chaos around him last year.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know, just between you and me and Ed, I love his commercials. I think they're funny as hell. When the one way he goes and gets the straw and the drink and forgets the straw, I thought it was hysterical.
It's not ideal, though, when those commercials are running and, like, during a game in which you're down, like, 30 to 10. You know, 5-8. Yeah.
I love that.
That's not question. Ideal.
Serious question on that. How does that play in the locker room when, you know, he's a second-year guy, they're not winning, and it's on TV ubiquitous, you know, it's on 24/7. How does that play with his teammates, you feel?
You know, I don't know that the commercials really, you know, and I you know, I haven't taken a poll, but just my sense, I don't know that the commercials were what created a strain. I think what really hurt them last year is they did not have a lot of leadership in that locker room, particularly on the defensive side. And just with the incidents that happened, you know, I think they manifest a lot of from that. You know, this was not a locker room that policed itself very well. So they really needed Baker's leadership, you know,
right.
Even though he's a second year player, you know, he's one of the two or three guys you could say, okay, that's a leader in the team, you know, Jarvis Landry being another, you know, couple offensive linemen and, you know, defensively, you know, Christian Kirksey, but you know, he was out for the last 14 weeks of the season. So, when Baker wasn't playing well, I think it was hard for him to balance, you know, being that same consistent leader, you know, the guy that you can count on to speak up in the locker room. And I think at times he sort of, you know, maybe took a step back when they really needed him. And then I think at other times he sort of overcompensated. And it's like, you know, dude, you're you know, you just threw three interceptions. Like, why are you talking to me like that?
Right.
So I just think it kind of fluctuated both ways. And you know, in talking to Baker, especially later on in the season, you just got the sense that was something he really learned. You just have to be a consistent leader no matter what. And I think that he really struggled with that because this was the first season, basically his entire football career, where he really, really struggled on the field.
You know, and he's never been through anything like that. Not in high school, not in college, and not in the pros. Now, the Browns, Jake, that's 12 straight losing seasons. How do you change a culture of losing, The media jumped on them like they were going to be the next best thing, and the talent on the roster made you think that it could happen. But are we overlooking how hard it is to change a losing culture?
Yeah, I think I was naive going into it, you know, because I just moved to Cleveland last summer, and I looked at their team. You know, I've watched Baker play, I don't know how many football games, and you look at their roster, and you're like, there's like no way this team doesn't make the playoffs. Like, even in a worst case scenario, you're thinking like 9-7 as you go down the schedule.
At the worst,
and I took for granted how important culture is in an NFL locker room, in an NFL franchise, how important continuity is, stability. I mean, you know, like, they have fired a million head coaches and general managers since coming back to the league in 99. Since the Haslams bought the team in 2012, they basically average a new coach like every 1.5 years, a new GM like every 1.8 years, whatever it is. So, you know, you can't win in the NFL when you don't have a plan, or whatever plan you do have, you never stick to it. So I'm interested to see whether they stick with this plan, where they have, you know, a general manager in Andrew Berry who has a relationship with the head coach in Kevin Stefanski, who both have a relationship with chief strategy officer Paul DePodesta, the guy who Jonah Hill played in the movie Moneyball.
nice.
People forget he's with the Browns. So they have some synergy there with their decision makers in a way that they haven't before. They've had a lot of arranged marriages before, you know, including last year, where it almost felt like they had independent front offices, with one run by DePodesta and one run by John Dorsey, and they didn't really collaborate, it felt like to me. And then if you talk to people, you know, in the building, they definitely did not collaborate. So, but it, you know, comes down to Jimmy Haslam, like, giving this regime the chance to, you know, maybe make some mistakes and maybe go through some growing pains, with the idea that, you know, 2-3 years down the line, that they, you know, that they'll have something to show for it. The problem they have now is you've got a quarterback in Baker Mayfield, the guy you finally feel like maybe can be your franchise quarterback for the first time since, I don't know, Bernie Kosar. And you've already given him his fourth head coach in 3 years. You've already given him his third play caller in 3 years. There's not a lot of precedent for success in the NFL going that route. And so, I mean, I think that this is really their last chance to get it right before they are completely at square one again. Because if you don't have that guy, you don't have Aaron Rodgers, you know, you don't have Tom Brady, you don't have that guy in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, you're not going anywhere. You know, there's some exceptions, but for the most part, you have no chance. And if Baker is not that guy, and maybe he doesn't become that guy because of all the mistakes that you have made, then your franchise is basically screwed, and you're back to, you know, picking number one overall and starting all over again. So they've got to get this right. And I like the moves that they made, because they're saying, like, we are all in on Baker. We're going to go sign him a tight end. Maybe we have to overpay for him a little bit, but, you know, he's going to give us a presence over the middle of the field. We're going to go out and solve our offensive line issues by signing the top right tackle on the market, and at number 10 overall in the draft, you know, potentially drafting our left tackle in the future. You know, we're going to go get a guy who can help Baker in the locker room, in Case Keenum, about the right way to do things and you know, how to read coverages. And this is what we need to do here. Who understands Stefanski's offense. And a guy that, like, I don't know how well you guys know Case Keenum, but just talking to people that coached him and played with him, like, if you can't find anybody to say a bad thing about him. So I think it'll be, you know, potentially a great situation for him. But, you know, the Browns are I think this is it. Like, if it doesn't work this season, assuming we have it this season or whenever the next season is, you know, Baker all of a sudden is going to be extension eligible. And I think you not only do you question, like, if you're Cleveland, is he the guy or not? Like, if you're Baker Mayfield and you have more chaos around you, do you want to be in Cleveland? I mean, you only get one NFL career. And I think this is the most important season the Cleveland Browns have had, you know, maybe since we maybe got to go all the way back to 99 when they came back to the league after Modell took the team to Baltimore.
Well, I would assume he'd want to be in Cleveland, because here's a trivia question. How many Cleveland quarterbacks have failed and then gone on to start and had success for another team?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of players and coaches that have you know, failed in Cleveland and gone on and, you know, done well at other places. You know, Kyle Shanahan, for example, you know, is the most recent
example.
You fail at quarterback, you know, you become a journeyman after that. You know, it doesn't really, you know, you don't really get another chance.
Yeah, look at Colt, you know.
Yeah, Colt, you know, you know, Johnny Manziel, you know, is another example of a you know, Texas connection. Although, you know, I don't know how much that was Cleveland's fault. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you're Baker, you're going to look at this situation and be like, is this going to ruin my career? Do I need to try to get out of here? You know, I think that's something that could be on the table if they don't show him from the other side of things that they're finally going to do things the right way.
I think the only one I could come up with is Vinny Testaverde. You know, he played four seasons with Cleveland, but he came over from Tampa Bay and he ended up being a two-time Pro Bowler, but ended up with six teams. So you don't want a journeyman quarterback. I mean, that's a tough. You don't want to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, I mean, I know that guy's got a lot of money, but journeyman quarterbacks don't win Super Bowls.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah, and that's a rare example of that working out. Usually it doesn't work out that way.
Right. So you brought up the subject. You know, you work at ESPN. You know a lot of people. Are we going to have a full NFL season, in your opinion?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anybody knows the answer to that because I don't know what the situation is going to look like a week from now, much less 3 months from now. I don't know what our country is going to look like a week from now, much less 3 months from now. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows at this point? I mean, do I think it's possible that there isn't one? Sure. I think that's possible. I think we all have to agree that, you know, this is kind of at least in our lifetimes and sort of an unprecedented situation. And so I have no idea, you know, what is going to happen, but I think there is a scenario in which, you know, we don't have one.
One thing said, and I've talked about, and I think said you'll agree with me, is that the drop dead date for canceling the season would be pushed so far back because how important this season is to America's psyche, and then obviously finances and media and everything. But I don't know about you, Sid and Jake, but don't you think they would wait till like July 1st or even August 1st to cancel the season? And I can even see them make the decision, all right, let's start it in November and we'll play 10 games.
I wonder too, guys, I think it would be easier for the NFL to play their season than for college football to play their season because, you know, the NFL has a union that can sort of speak on behalf of the players.
Right.
You know, the teams go through one channel to the commissioner, whereas college football, I mean, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, confederations out there, basically. I mean, you have different conferences, different commissioners, like it, even though they're under one umbrella, they're a little, you know, there's different rules in each conference and, you know, university presidents, you know, who basically make those calls at different schools might have different opinions about the way that they should proceed. So, Like I don't know. Again, I don't know what's going to happen, but I do think that the NFL is more likely to play its season than college football would play it.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think, Chad? What do you think?
I completely agree because it's just more disjointed in college. All of these conferences, the Power Five, and then you got everybody else. The NFL, the one thing about the NFL, 32 teams, 32 owners who are 90% on the same page, it can happen. And another thing is, I just think, like Jake said, with the union, they have a voice at the table. And the fact that football goes through February, after February, there's not a lot going on in our country. So they could shorten the season. And if they had to go through February, have a late February Super Bowl, they could do that. They could do that, and people would watch because it's the NFL. So whatever the NFL does, they as long as there are games, the fans are going to be there. College is just a little – there are just a lot more layers to it. It would be a lot tougher. But I really don't think they'd cancel the college season, too, because it's just so much money on the table. And these conferences want that TV money, and – I've seen people online talking about, oh, they can play in an empty stadium. I don't want to see that. I'm a wrestling fan, and they've been showing wrestling events in empty gyms, and it just doesn't fly. The fans are such an important part of this, so I just don't envision them doing anything without the fans.
And I mean, think about this: like, how can you play college football games if students are not in school in the fall?
Wow.
You know, like how do you justify that? So, again, I think it's a little bit more complicated for college football, you know, proceeding forward. And again, we're just speculating because we have no idea what things are going to look like in the fall. We have no idea.
But you're both right. It's the NFL is socialism. I mean, Bernie Sanders has to love the NFL. If they share TV revenue and, like you say, one commissioner, whereas, you know, college sports are just so disjointed for all the reasons you both have mentioned. So, like you say, they can speak with one voice through the players' union or the commissioner, and college football just too fractured to ever do that. So, and I tell you, if both of them do get canceled, oh my God, you know, it's going to be Tiger King. For society, it's just going to be craziness.
We're going to do a podcast together if that happens, ranking the top 100 teams in Texas football history.
That won't take long.
You have the benefit of having seen them all play, Kurt.
Oh my goodness,
that's true though, Duck. You've seen all of the championship teams,
every one of them. Here's
the go ahead. No, you go ahead, Duck.
Well, you know, speaking of the one voice, the NFL, the CBA, collective bargaining agreement got approved. Tell me what your views are, Jake, on the 17-game schedule. Probably not would be this year, maybe the next year, and then expanded playoff.
The Browns have a better chance to make the playoffs now. That's my first takeaway. There's another team. Nice. So they wouldn't have made it last year at 6-10, but – their chances of getting in went up a little bit. One thing I noticed just like covering the NFL, full time for the first time last season, it is a long season. It's a long season. You know, college football, we get done, you know, in 12 weeks. And, you know, you're only like three quarters of the way there in the NFL. So, I mean, I think it was not an insignificant thing for the owners to get out of this new CBA. Of course, there's going to be a lot of money on the table for everybody. With the emergence of gambling, getting a seat at the table, that kind of money, there's even going to be more cash to be had. So, I mean, it's understandable why they did it, but it not even playing the game or practicing. I mean, that's not nothing. It may seem like nothing going from 16 to 17, but that's a long season. For the NFL, for the players.
How'd the Browns feel about did they have one voice on the CBA, or are they kind of fractured?
Well, you know, what's interesting is the new president of the NFLPA is J.C. Tretter, who's the Browns' starting center, who actually majored in labor relations at Cornell. So he was like uniquely qualified for that role, was just elected. So he's going to have a big say in what the players want and need going forward. But the CBA's passed. It's going to be the law of the land for the next, decade in the NFL. And, it will be interesting to see, what happens, how the dynamic of the playoff changes. You know, that one bye is going to be, is going to be competitive. And so, I think in addition to, getting an extra week, I think that teams are going to be less likely to sit people that last week of the season, because there's going to be a big difference between playing in round one and getting the bye. Whereas before, you'd have two teams get the bye. And so it was more likely that they would have things locked up and, maybe home field would still be in the balance. But, that there's a reason why fantasy football championships end in week 16, not week 17. And now, week 18 with the bye. So I think not only going to have an extra week of games, but I think that those games will probably be more competitive because of what's going to be at stake in the playoffs.
Oh yeah, it's hard to win after playing in that first weekend. You mentioned J.C. Tretter being the Players Association president. He beat out Sam Acho from Texas for that position. Right. But speaking of pass rushers, I had to ask you about Myles Garrett. I mean, everybody saw the He tried to take Mason Rudolph's head off. And is this, you know, and he's still maintaining that Mason Rudolph slurred him. Mike Tomlin went on TV and said it didn't happen. The league investigated, no findings. Do you think this is going to follow him? Yeah, I know he's reinstated. Or is this going to follow him for the rest of his career? Is this going to be a dark cloud hanging over his head? Because we know him to be a soft-spoken, cool guy.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it was interesting that he got reinstated. I can't even remember when that happened. I guess that was in February, but it feels like February was 9 years ago. You know, he got reinstated and then, you know, went on ESPN. I know the Browns were not aware that he was going on ESPN on Outside the Lines, and I don't think Outside the Lines was aware that he was going to say what he said, basically doubling down and being more specific about the accusation. And I don't feel like anybody's really talking about it anymore. You know, kind of like everything else, you know, we move on to the next thing. And right. he was the one that brought it, made it a big deal again. And so, you know, that prompted the strong response from Mason Rudolph. It prompted the strong response from Mike Tomlin, who I believe went on First Take.
Yeah, you know, with Stephen A.
Yeah, on Mike Tomlin or something.
Rudolph, yeah.
So, and, you know, I don't, you know, I guess Mike Tomlin is notorious for doing no media in the offseason, so that made it an even, you know, bigger deal that he would do that, you know, defending his quarterback. So, I don't know. I mean, I think the less that he talks about it, the better, or the more likely it will go away. But, yeah, I mean, you know, that's, you know, when he retires, that's going to be something that's going to be in his retirement story, that he, you know, was involved in one of the ugliest incidents in, on the field in NFL history. And, you know, I think if he wants to move on, like, he's just, you know, got to stop talking about it. If he keeps talking about it, then it's going to continue to, you know, follow him. And on the other side, it's going to continue to follow Mason as well.
You know, this thing reminded me, and Kirk remembers this. Jake, you weren't around yet, but Kermit Washington in the early 70s, or in the 70s, maybe the mid 70s, got into this brawl, and he played for the Lakers, I believe, and he cold cocked Rudy Tomjanovich of the Houston Rockets and just broke bones in his face. Had Myles Garrett landed that, he would have been this generation's Kermit Washington. It would have followed him for the rest of his career. But I think my advice to him is, do put up 15 sacks and people will stop talking about that.
Yeah, and I think, and I think, you know, if people are going to be watching him closely, you know, when he comes back. And so, you know, he had a couple incidents last season before that where he punched Lonnie Walker in the helmet or in the face mask in week one and didn't get ejected, but you thought he might.
Mm-hmm.
He got a, you know, a 15-yard penalty for it. And then the next week, he broke, you know, Trevor Siemian's ankle on, like, a late hit and got fined, I think, $40,000 in that game for late hit. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, you know, he sort of, you know, is going to have that reputation just from that one incident. There were other things that preceded that. So, you know, if there's, you know, a cheap shot or something like that early on in the season, I would imagine that the NFL would come down pretty harshly on him versus the player who, you know, didn't have, you know, incidents in his past.
No question about it. I mean, you don't want to be the new Vontaze Burfict, you know.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Exactly. So, what's the new normal for Jake Trotter? Jake, for those of you who don't know, has a beautiful, gorgeous, smart, funny wife, Rachel.
That's right.
She's perfect, and you got what now? 6 kids?
Well, when we were doing this, we were doing this podcast. Am I allowed how we communicate here? Facebook Messenger, and I don't have Facebook, so I was like, well, I can use my wife's. Let me friend Sed on there through her account, and they were already friends, Kirk.
I don't know about that.
I thought it was kind of suspicious.
She's always.
She's always. What's going on there?
Hey, I'll explain it. I'll explain it, Jake. Why your wife and I are Facebook friends?
Yeah, it's all good.
Go ahead.
She's a woman.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they just come after your boy all the time.
Oh, okay,
she requested me. I did not request her. I'm gonna ask her.
Well, good to know that. So yeah, we have three kids now. They're basically babies. So 3.5, 2, and then a 7-month-old who my wife gave birth to like a month after we moved to Cleveland. So they're all at home. It's actually been a lot of fun, spending that much time with them, because we're just like around each other, all day. We've had to be creative in entertaining them, because they're not old enough yet to where they can, entertain themselves. So, we've done a scavenger hunt. We're doing different, crafts all the time. My wife, especially, we created like a dinosaur habitat for them.
You got to get out of there. You got to get out of there.
I know, right? It's like I lay my head down like at 8 o'clock and we're just like exhausted every day. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of parents are going through that right now.
Well, you should, with through your connections, you need to order them one of those baby tigers in the mail.
Hit the family discount.
I gotta introduce them to my roots, right? My ancestral roots.
That's the only thing you're missing. Well, Theo's kind of the man of the house there now at three, right? So,
he's the 2-year-old. Dorothy runs the show at 3.5. She's the boss.
You know what I love, Duck? I mean, Trotter's always on me about that Stillwater is a better city than Tyler, where I'm from. He was on that for years, and it just did my heart so good to see him have to end up in Cleveland. That is the Stillwater of the Midwest. Come on.
Well, we had to separate you and Rachel, Edric. So that was
important. That's why I had to get out of Big 12 country before
Exactly.
Well, this got too complicated.
This has been a little slice of heaven. I told my wife, hey, we got Jake Trotter on our podcast. Jake, my fourth son. And we miss you here in Austin.
We do.
And hope we can do this again as the season hopefully approaches.
Listen, I'm available for any kind of content killing podcast. I appreciate you guys having me on. And I would say, we'll see each other soon, but, who knows at this point?
Man, so we don't know.
Maybe we'll have to do a Zoom happy hour or something at some point.
I like it.
We'll do it, man. Hey, we love you, Jake.
Give Rachel our best and give Baker our best, and you stay safe, all right?
Okay, guys. We'll see you later.
Love you, man. Bye-bye.
All right, brother. Bye.
On Second Thought.
Duck, we got to somehow convince Jake Trotter to leave those Browns and come back and work for us.
Well, if ESPN lays them off, we'll put in an offer. You and I'll pool our salaries.
Don't even put that out there. We're not talking layoffs this week.
That's a sore subject, right?
That is kind of a sore subject with us. So yeah, we're not going to go there. But
if we do during our furloughs, and we should tell our people we're going to be furloughed 1 week a month for the next 3 months.
So mm-hmm.
We may not be doing our full podcast schedule.
But you know what? We're going to try to bring you one every week. I mean, we may have to change some things up and tape a little earlier because we have some people that you want to hear from. There are guys, Longhorn greats like Hodges Mitchell and Quandre Diggs of the Seattle Seahawks. Who I've been talking to, Duck, and they want to be on the podcast. So we're gonna bring those people to you, and the podcast. There might be a couple that might not run as long, but they're still going to be very entertaining. We're here to entertain, Duck.
Yes, we are, and inform, and to enlighten just a little bit. We hope.
Well, give us some information. What's shaking? Some big news coming out of college football and spring sports.
Well, the NCAA did the right thing when the Division I Council approved a measure to grant an extra year of eligibility and another season for not just seniors, but all athletes in spring sports. And this was a landmark decision because the NCAA doesn't do that. Now, it did not reward seniors are athletes in the winter sports.
They shouldn't have.
Because 95% of the seasons were over, and Yeah, you've got the 68 NCAA teams and 32 NIT, but by and large, for the rank and file of the 350 Division I basketball program, their seasons were coming to an end. So I think they were right to exclude the winter sports, and they were also very prudent and wise to extend this olive branch and more to the spring sports.
I thought so, and for me, I just think that it gives kids options, especially the ones that might not be draft ready, that we're looking at maybe not being able to make a living now, being able to maybe pursue that dream. Now they get a chance to come back to school and work on that craft even more. The one that really Miranda Ellis, the softball pitcher for Texas, that's a big boon for Mike White. That's huge for Mike White. But David Pierce, the Texas baseball coach, I think that's going to give him a lot of options too. You spoke to David about this issue, and here's what he had to say.
It's a victory for college baseball and the spring sports for sure. And the one thing that I recognize is the NCAA basically said, all right, here's the parameters. This is what you can and can't do. Now they pushed it to us to decipher through it and figure it out. And I'm okay with that because I would rather be the one making those decisions and even some of those tough conversations as opposed to the NCAA telling us exactly what we can or can't do. So I'm pleased that they voted that direction. I think that it gives us options. But what I've done is I started with our seniors working down and just kind of giving them the information as much as possible.
Duncan sounded like he was pretty happy about what's going to happen now, even though he's going to have to do some juggling on his roster.
Well, I reached out to several of the UT spring sport coaches, and they're all pretty excited. They're kind of waiting a little bit with bated breath because they don't know how it's going to play out, what are the nuances. But when I spoke to the Texas Senior Associate AD for Compliance, you know, she compiled the list for me and told me there were 198 spring sport athletes at the 8 sports that UT has, and 52 of those are seniors. Now, 3 of them don't get aid. So we're talking mostly 49 seniors who will be most impacted. And as you said, Miranda Ellis, the ace for Mike White's softball team, said she's coming back. Emily Hoffman for the golf team, on the other hand, said she's turning pro. So you just don't know what each individual decision is going to be. You know, I did a column last week on the Tirati twins, Bianca and Anna Tirati from Italy.
Tennis.
And they in tennis, women's tennis, and they both want to come back. Bianca's eager to start her pro career. Anna, who needed at least probably another semester to graduate, acted like she wanted to come back. So, and I'm glad that they passed this when they did. You know, we were on the conference call with Bob Bowlesby last week, and he said, "I just don't think there's that urgency, and I think they ought to delay it in part because football could be disrupted. And then what do you do with those athletes?" However, my point and disagreement on this is that we may not know about football season until July or August. And these other spring sport athletes can't wait that long because some are graduating, some may have jobs. Some, as you mentioned, will be drafted, and who knows what form of these drafts they're going to be moving forward. So, you know, I salute the NCAA of doing the right thing, and it's no small decision because you're impacting a lot of lives, and it's not an inexpensive decision because, as Lori Hammond of Texas told me, all 49 seniors came back and were kept at the same age. It'd be a $1.2 million price tag for UT.
Man, that is a lot of money. And since it's not football, Duck, or basketball, That's a big price tag because we're talking about basically non-revenue producing sports. Baseball makes a little bit of money in most seasons, but the rest of those sports aren't making any money. So Texas is going to have to reach into his pockets to get to allow these kids to come back. So that's not always easy. Now Texas, with its big checkbook, is going to be fine. But for some of these smaller schools, these non-Power 5 schools, you wonder if that's going to be a financial burden.
Because they don't know what their revenue from football and men's basketball is going to be. We already saw the NCAA is cutting their revenue that will be distributed. You know, that may be like a third or more that they may cut. And like you say, every school's different. You know, I mean, Texas has rowing, for instance. And that's 20 athletes that are rowers. And part of that's a gender equity Title IX thing where you want the male and female scholarship to equal. But 20 rowing scholarships is not an expense that every other school has. So Texas will have to dip in the pocket. And I should say, when I talked to Chris Del Conte, he was totally in support of this ruling. And even though it will be a costly one, he thinks it's the right thing to do.
Well, speaking of Chris Del Conte, Doug, how about the news? I mean, You got the shock man coming back. We still haven't heard on Karen Aston. What do you think is the hold up on that?
Well, that's interesting because Chris Del Conte is very hesitant to talk on the record about her situation. As you and I both know, her contract was due to expire in August, so she was in the final months of her contract. And so technically, if Del Conte decides to make a change, he's not firing her, but effectively he is, because to me it's all about semantics, and that's his choice. Mm-hmm. And I think if he decided to bring Shaka back, which he has after 5 years of mediocrity with no NCAA tournament wins, Karen Aston probably deserves to come back too, because she has more skins on the wall. How do you see it?
I hate to agree with you, but how can he bring Shaka back and then fire Karen, who's going to be in the tournament again, who's always in the tournament.
Always in the tournament, yeah. And usually wins a game or two.
So, yeah. She's
been to Sweet 16, the lead eight.
And you can get her at a pretty cheap price, even with an extension. You give her another $100,000 a year, and she's making like $850,000, which is a bargain for a big program like Texas. And it's partly her fault that she can't compete with Baylor, but a lot of people can't compete with Baylor. Baylor lost two games all year. Kim Mulkey's a Hall of Fame coach, Doug. So
yeah, he's one of the top coaches in history.
Yeah, we'd love to see Karen put up more of a fight against Mulkey, her teams, but you can't just hold that against her. And if you're bringing Shaka back, who has not gotten it done. Duck has not gotten it done. He finished third in the Big 12. Where did the Longhorn women finish? Did they finish third? I think they did.
I think they were third. But Shaka's team was tied with three other teams. It was a four-way tie for third.
So third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. Yeah.
Yeah, they're in the top six of a 10-team league. So let's be real about that.
So I think he should bring her back. Give her 2 years. That'll give you a good chance to see what she can do with the Celeste Taylor, Charlie Collier pairing. Those are two really good players coming back. But I just, you know, I don't think how he could just let her walk away. Who are you going to get? And, you know, that might open up a can of worms for CDC in the gender equity department. I think there are going to be some ladies out there that'll be very upset if he let her go.
Yeah, you know, that's a very valid point. I hope if he does make the change that he doesn't hide behind the semantics and say, well, we didn't fire her because that's just lip service.
We parted ways. Yeah. Mutually. Exactly. Yeah.
What's the difference there? So,
no difference.
As far as the Shaka decision, I don't think either one of us was shocked when they announced they were retaining Shaka, given the climate with the coronavirus pandemic. It's just, these are difficult, challenging times. And let's be honest, you and me, thinks the fact they would owe him $10.5 million was that a huge figure, or was that the decisive factor in bringing Chaka back, in your opinion?
I think it's the decisive factor. I think without the corona, and if they go in and lose to Tech, I think that would have been the death knell for Chaka. The fact that they didn't get to play in the Big 12 tournament, and then the coronavirus happens, he can go in and play the 5-1 in the last six games card, and you get to not have to pay him $10 million. When you know money is a little tighter than usual, I think it was just a smart decision by Chris to bring him back, despite his lack of success in the postseason. This is not the kind of time you want to be doing a major coaching search when everybody's basically sequestered and not able to freely move around. Everything is online. So to me, I think it was a smart decision. Give him one more year, but I also think you got to give Karen one more year.
So you think it was a money decision?
I've always thought it was a money decision, Duck. And I'm going to tell you why. I just don't know. Like I've said many times before on this podcast, they like basketball at Texas. The fan base, they're not as passionate as the baseball fans, or definitely not the football fans. But my thing is, they don't want to be embarrassed. They just want their basketball team to make the tournament and win a game or two. And if special things happen like 03, okay, that's fine. But they don't want to be in the NIT, and they don't want to be one and done. They just want their basketball team to be top 15, top 20. They don't care enough, I think, to give a guy $10.5 million and then have to be on the hook for another 40 or 50 to get another guy in there. They don't care that much about hoops.
No, they don't. They're not passionate about hoops. But I do think they go beyond not wanting to be embarrassed. Like you said, top 15. Del Conte himself has been on, he expects them to be top 10 and competing for championships. Well, we know Chaka isn't doing that and hasn't done that in 5 years. So I think the money thing just cannot be disregarded, and not just in a vacuum. If you owe him $10.5 million, and then if you're at all worried about Tom Herman and the football program, and maybe the football season doesn't happen, so you have that loss of revenue as well, which is, could be a double whammy. That's a big thing for Del Conte and Greg Penvis, the school president, to consider. No question about that. So, I wrote last week that, he should stipulate to Chaka, you need to get in the tournament and win probably two games. If you get in the tournament and win one game and really celebrate that, one NCAA tournament win in 6 years, and then the next season, whether it's midseason or whatever, you're going into a new arena, I don't know how the Longhorn fan base would accept that.
It's a complicated relationship with Chaka, and one fan base, because they loved him. They brought love back to him when they won those five straight at the end. But then, boom, soon as you put a little bit of expectation on them, they cratered. And that is a huge concern.
Yeah,
they are not a prime time bunch. They won those five games after people left them for dead. And I'm not trying to take away from the fact that they won those games, because Duck, to go into Lubbock, to go into Stillwater, the places like that, and get wins, to go into Morgantown, I mean, or to beat Huggy Bear here, I mean, those things matter. And the totality of his resume this year is they took a step forward. At the end of the day, 9-9, not acceptable in my book, but 9-9, teams have traditionally, historically made the tournament in the Big 12. So I thought they were going to make the tournament, but I do think they needed to beat Tech after that embarrassment. But which Chaka team will show up? Greg Brown III, huge card in all of this. If he shows up, then Chaka will have zero excuses. They should wreck shop next year with this nucleus coming back, and if Greg Brown signs.
Well, he shouldn't have any excuse anyway in year six. And he, assuming Jericho Sims comes back and both of us feel like he definitely needs to, he's got his whole roster back. He doesn't have one senior. So he's got momentum. He's got some stability because he was given another year to come back. So I just, as I wrote, I'm just hesitant to think, well, with the five-game winning streak, that Shaka has turned the corner, especially when they laid the egg at home against an Oklahoma State team that was not going to be in the NCAA tournament. And Texas was never in that game. I mean, I know you were at baseball that day, but, I mean, that was never a game. They got behind, I think it may have been like 20-3. And so, like, you could argue they were so loose during that five-game win streak, they had nothing to lose. They're just not playing with house money so much, but it's like nobody expected anything. And then come the regular season home finale with everything on the line, when probably all you had to do was beat an Oklahoma State team and you're definitely in, they laid the biggest egg of the season.
You know what? And if they win that game, Duck, and then the corona happens, and it was going to happen anyway, we're not even talking about Shaka's job status, because then they're 10-8, and we know he's back. Yeah. We know he's back.
And he deserves so much credit, and he does deserve credit for the five-game winning streak, but taken in its totality, the big picture, it just seems like it's mediocrity. And so, and you and I both like the guy. We're not trying to get rid of the guy. I mean, you know, it's like Charlie Strong got 3 years, and yes, that was football. So Shaka's got 6 years, so he's got a lot of pressure next year, and let's hope he turns the corner.
On Second Thought.
That will do it for episode 175 of On Second Thought. Big thanks to our buddy Jake Trotter of ESPN.com. For the Duck, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.